This Christmas morning, we welcome the Prince of Peace, commemorate in a special way his arrival into our world some 2,000 years ago. A couple days ago, I came across a statement by Pope Benedict, which he prepared for the World Day of Peace. I think it's January 1st. And I'd just like to quote from his statement. It's a reminder to us what the arrival of the Prince of Peace has to say to us specifically. And these are just short excerpts. The attainment of peace depends above all on recognizing that we are in God one human family. The path to the attainment of the common good and to peace is above all that of respect for human life in all its many aspects, beginning with its conception, through its development, and up to its natural end. True peacemakers are those who love, defend, and promote human life in all its dimensions. Some of you have heard from me, maybe I mention this in the confessional all the time. All of us have situations, maybe almost every day, where something or other could upset us, upset the peace in our heart. And I think this notion of peace is important for us to be thinking about this Christmas day. I think the challenge for all of us is, no matter what's going on in our lives, to try to keep in the very depths of our hearts peace towards the others we may be dealing with. It may be somebody we have to actually combat or oppose in some way. But the challenge is to keep peace in our heart, in the center of our heart toward them, being conscious that they also are made in the image and likeness of God, that God loves them, and God wants them in heaven with us. That's one way of putting it. A few days ago, I came across this story, which I'd like to share with you. And it's a time of war. It's World War II. And also in a war, even soldiers are required to do what they can to keep that sense of peace towards those they may even be opposing. The two main characters here, just so you're clear, and this story takes place just before Christmas, 1943. One is an American, a 21-year-old B-17 bomber pilot, Charlie Brown. And the other is, I think he's a 26-year-old German fighter pilot, Franz Stigler. So those are the two we're talking about. On December 20th, 1943, a 21-year-old American bomber pilot named Charlie Brown found himself somewhere over Germany, struggling to keep his plane in the air with just one of its four engines still functioning. They were returning from their first mission as a unit, the successful bombing of a German munitions factory. Of his crew members, one was dead and six wounded. And Second Lieutenant Charlie Brown was alone in the cockpit, the three unharmed men tending to the others. Brown's B-17 had been attacked by 15 German planes and left for dead, and Brown himself had been knocked out in the assault, regaining consciousness in just enough time to pull the plane out of a near-fatal nosedive. None of that was as shocking as the German pilot now suddenly to his right. Brown thought he was hallucinating. He did that thing you see people do in movies. He closed his eyes and shook his head no. He looked again out the co-pilot's window. Again, the lone German was still there, and now it was worse. He had flown over to Brown's left and was frantic, pointing, mouthing things that Brown could not begin to comprehend, making wild gestures, exaggerating his expressions like a cartoon character. Brown was already in shock and was freshly shot through with fear. What was this guy up to? He craned his neck and yelled back to his top gunner, screamed at him to get in his turret and to shoot the guy out of the sky. Before Brown's gunner could squeeze off his first round, the German did something even weirder. He looked Brown in the eye and gave him a salute. Then he peeled away. What just happened? That question would haunt Brown for more than 40 years, long after he married and left the service and resettled in Miami, long after he had expected the nightmares about the German to stop and just learn to live with them. A new book tells the incredible true story of these two pilots. Franz Stigler was 26 when he was conscripted into Hitler's Luftwaffe, a former commercial airline pilot whose father and brother had both died serving their country. On his first day on base, Franz Stigler was taken aside by his commanding officer, Lieutenant Gustav Redl, who would have a profound impact on his life during and after the war. On the afternoon of his first mission, Redl decided he'd join the young pilot, and before takeoff, they talked. "Let what I'm about to say to you act as a warning," Redl said. "Honor is everything here. Every single time you go up, you will be outnumbered." Franz Stigler nodded and said nothing. What did Redl mean by that? Stigler was overwhelmed. There never seemed to be a right way to respond. And the irony that he couldn't, above all, trust his fellow soldiers was not lost on him. Redl kept on. "What will you do, for instance, if you find your enemy floating in a parachute?" "I guess I never thought that far ahead," Stigler said. "If I ever see or hear of you shooting at a man in a parachute," Redl said, "I will shoot you down myself. You follow the rules of war for you, not for your enemy. You fight by rules to keep your humanity." Redl was not alone in this philosophy, and not just among the Germans. Most of these young men now at war, American, British, German, had grown up on the stories of the great World War I fighter pilots, the American Eddie Rickenbacker and Manfred von Richthofen, the German Red Baron. These were men who fought by a code, who would look each other in the eye midair, who would never strafe an enemy plane that was already going down. They had been taught they very well might survive the war, and if they did, they needed to know that they had fought with honor and with as much humanity as possible. It would be the only way they would ever be able to live with themselves. Franz Stigler had been on the ground in Oldenburg, Germany, smoking a cigarette when his plane, a Messerschmitt 109, was getting rearmed and refueled. At first, it sounded like a high pitch off in the distance, and then it was crushing like a multitude of drums, a low-flying aircraft. Here it came, just a few miles out, this American B-17 that dropped no bombs. Then suddenly, it was over and gone. No one said a word. The crew unhooked the hoses. Franz saluted his sergeant and was gone, off in pursuit of the American B-17. If he could down this one aircraft, Stigler would have his 23rd victory, and he'd be awarded the Knight's Cross, the highest honor for a German soldier in World War II, and one that symbolized exceptional bravery. Within minutes, Franz Stigler alone was on the tail of the B-17. He had his finger on the trigger, one eye closed and the other squinting through his gun sight. He took aim and was about to fire when he realized that what he was not seeing. This plane had no tail guns blinking. This plane had no left stabilizer. The plane had no tail gun compartment left. And as he got closer, Stigler saw the terrified tail gunner himself, his fleece collar soaked red, the guns themselves streaked with it, icicles of blood hanging from the barrels. Stigler was no longer energized. He was alarmed. He pulled alongside the plane and saw cleaned through the middle where the skin had been blown apart by shells. He saw these terrified young men attempting to tend to their wounded. He drew equal to the B-17 and saw the nose of the plane also had been blown away. How was this thing still in the air? At first, Charlie Brown did not notice the small German plane to his right. He was thinking. He had six wounded men in the back, some were strong enough to jump out, but the critically injured would never survive the German forest. He'd have to keep flying, try to make it to England. But the others should jump. The chances that this plane would make it much further were minuscule. Brown's co-pilot, Pinky, re-entered the cockpit. "We are staying," he said. "The guys all decided you're going to need help to fly this girl home." Brown wasn't listening. He was looking past Pinky, frozen. Pinky turned to his right and saw the German. Brown finally spoke. "He's going to destroy us." Franz Stigler, too, was panicked. The American B-17 was going down, and his crew was paralyzed. Stigler pointed to the ground and finally a reaction. The Americans shook their heads. They'd rather die in flames than be taken prisoners by the Nazis. Stigler was exasperated. As it was, he was risking his own life. If Stigler's plane were to be spotted by a German civilian alongside an American B-17, and if that civilian wrote down the number on his tail and reported him, he was as good as dead. Then Franz Stigler remembered what Lieutenant Radl had told him, that to shoot the enemy when vulnerable went against the code of chivalry and honor. And Stigler felt he had to do what was right. Near the Atlantic Wall, flak gunners spotted the two planes approaching, the American B-17 and the German Messerschmitt. They were stunned. They'd never seen anything like this. The enemy B-17 flying alongside a German plane, both seeming to be in sync, neither one firing or in pursuit or dodging or spiraling. Stigler had thought of this and pulled away right before he was spotted. He knew that if his compatriots could identify his 109, they'd never shoot one of their own. How would they ever know what was really going on in his mind? To the Americans, though, Stigler was potential death. Charlie Brown couldn't take it anymore, and that was when he snapped out of it, yelling at his gunner to get in the turret and take aim at the German. And that's when Lieutenant Franz Stigler saluted Lieutenant Charlie Brown and quickly disappeared. Against all odds, Charlie Brown landed his crippled B-17 in England. Brown served as a military pilot right up until the beginning of the Vietnam War, and eventually settled with his wife in Miami. Stigler, who spent months after December 20, 1943, living in fear that he'd be found out, served through the end of World War II, and unable ever to feel at home in Germany, relocated in Vancouver, Canada, in 1953. Aside from telling their wives, both men had rarely spoken of that encounter. In Franz Stigler's case, it was an act of treason, punishable by death. Charlie Brown had actually told his commanding officer, but was instructed to treat the event as classified. No one wanted to humanize the enemy. Charlie Brown, who was still deeply traumatized by the incident, thought about searching for the German until finally, in January 1990, knowing the odds were against him, he took out an ad in a newsletter for fighter pilots, looking for the one, quote, who saved my life on December 20, 1943. He held back one key piece of information, where the German pilot had abandoned his B-17. Now at home in Vancouver, Franz Stigler saw the ad. He yelled to his wife, "This is him. This is the one I didn't shoot down." Franz had always wondered if the great risk he'd taken had been worth it, if the American had made it home. Brown had always wondered what the German had been planning to do to him and why he had let him go. Franz Stigler immediately wrote a letter to Charlie Brown. Brown was too impatient actually to read the letter. He called the telephone operator and had her look up Franz Stigler's number and then placed the call immediately. "When I let you go over the sea," Stigler said, "I thought you'd never make it. "My God," Brown said, "it's you." Tears were streaming down Brown's face. Franz Stigler had answered Brown's secret question without Brown having to ask it. "What were you pointing for?" Brown asked him. Franz Stigler, too, was crying. He explained everything. That he could tell that Brown had no idea how bad the plane was, and that he was pointing first to the ground to get him to land in Germany, and then pointing another direction, mouthing Sweden, and that he was trying to escort them to safety, and that he had abandoned them only when he saw the gun swing from the turret of the B-17. "Good luck," Franz had said to Charlie Brown as he had saluted him from his cockpit. "You're in God's hands." The two men in many ways had parallel lives. Franz Stigler had one daughter, Charlie Brown had two. Both were devout Christians. And in combat, Stigler kept his rosary beads in his left pocket, the paint on the beads stripped bare from terror. Charlie Brown flew with a Bible in his pocket. And in moments of extreme fear, he'd pat it so that my prayers would beam up faster. Both felt that they should tell their story to as many people as would hear it, to make people realize that there's always another way, that the world could be infinitely better than it was. Franz Stigler and Charlie Brown both had heart attacks. Both died in 2008, 6 months apart. Franz Stigler was 92, Brown was 87. In their obituaries, each of the men listed the other as a special brother.